Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Mornings are hard. Your sports radio show doesn't have to be.
I'm so happy you guys are still alive.
I am excited.
I am so happy.
Laugh and learn every morning aboard the mothership.
Ooh.
Gonna be a good day with DA.
Hey, duh.
I do love the duh.
Happy being alive day.
Mornings on CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah.
Happy being alive day, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. Happy Monday to you. Coming your way this hour here on the show. We've got Stunt to a News in 20 minutes and in 40 minutes. Is somebody really going to be dumb enough to hand James Harden $200 million? Woof. But last night, Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals goes to the Heat in impressive fashion. It's a blowout. It was over at halftime. And you have to ask the question, how the hell with the season on the line in Miami could the Celtics lose by nearly 30 points? And the answer is that they believed they were better than they were. That they did not have the same intensity, urgency, or tenacity that they did last year or to match the Miami Heat. This was the perfect storm for the Heat. They were an 8 seed this year. Because of injuries, because of inconsistent play, because of a low net offensive rating, they could never really quite get on track over the course of the season. And so they had the 8 seed next to them. And people completely undervalued them. Even though it was much of the same team that went to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals last year and was the 1 seed of the East, everybody discounted them because they had the 8 seed next to their name. Secondly, they have a player that thrives in these moments in Jimmy Butler. Thirdly, they have a head coach who's been around the block many times. He's one of the best head coaches in the NBA, taking on a team that had a head coach that was inserted in there in the final 5 minutes of the preseason because Ime Udoka was unceremoniously dumped because of whatever happened behind the scenes, dating people, sleeping with people that worked for the organization, whatever happened. And then fourthly, they had a chip on their shoulder because of what happened against this team last year. All of that caused the perfect storm for the Heat to do this against the Celtics. Not to mention the Celtics were not properly challenged in the second round by the Sixers. I'm not necessarily saying that the Knicks did that for the Heat, sharpening steel. I think the Knicks were good, not great. But we thought that because of Joel Embiid's MVP season, because the Sixers had come to a point in time where they knew they had to get to the Eastern Conference Finals for Doc Rivers to keep his job or for this team to feel like they're actually still growing, that was a huge, huge, huge series. And the Celtics no-showed Game 5 at home, went to Game 6, trailed late in that game into the fourth quarter until a quick and hot shooting spree by Jason Tatum in the fourth, and then the Sixers no-showed themselves in 7. That wasn't two great combatants going back and forth and forcing the Celtics to have to make big shot after big shot. If the Sixers didn't have more layover and die in them than the Celtics, they would have won that series. It wasn't the right testing ground to be ready for the Heat. The Heat have so much more intensity and polish and a player that will rise to the occasion and never point fingers at Jimmy Butler, unlike Joel Embiid. So all of that combined to be this disaster for the Celtics. And Joe Mazzulla is just getting his pants pulled down every single game by Spo. Just, it's embarrassing. And Mazzulla either gets defensive or gives you non-answers about what the hell happened. Last night, all he said was, I didn't have the guys ready. Well, that's convenient, because what does that mean? How? Why? What? And let's put it on the Celtics players more so. Do you need Joe Mazzulla to imprint upon you how important down 0-2 is and not to go down 0-3? Now, this is a Jason Tatum problem. Yes, Mazzulla's at the coaching position, and Mazzulla's getting clowned by a guy that's been around the block. But this is a Jason Tatum problem, because Jason Tatum's doing none of the things Jimmy Butler's doing. Jason Tatum's been garbage in the fourth quarter of this series. He's been completely irrelevant. He's been invisible. This is a Jason Tatum problem. When he flips the switch, he's brilliant, like he was late game six against the Sixers. And then everybody saw 50-plus points in game seven against the Sixers and said, look at this big game performance. Well, pretty easy to drop a 50-burger when the other team's not playing. But what happens when your back's against the wall? What happens when somebody punches you in the mouth? What happens when it's Jimmy Butler and the Heat on the other side? And Tatum is, right now, turtling. Not fair to say he's always done this, because last year he was very good in this spot in the Eastern Conference Finals. Last year, he helped lead the Celtics to an early series lead over the Warriors and had him two wins away from a championship. But this year, this series, Tatum's been garbage. Absolute garbage. And the pathetic nature of the Celtics just hoisting up threes last night. It was like, we don't really want to play with any intensity anymore. We know that the Heat right now have our numbers. So let's just keep chucking threes, hope that they go in, and maybe that'll cut the deficit. What a garbage performance. What an absolute garbage performance. We were just talking about Jim Irsay giving his top five all-time NFL players in the wake of Jim Brown's passing. Again, it's just so weird to be like, oh, a guy died, so let's rank people. Which is what Irsay did, whatever. So Irsay is a weird duck anyway. And he does put Jim Brown number one. My question, going back to why he left Peyton Manning off of the top five, Mraz, is it possible that Jim Irsay has an axe to grind with Peyton Manning because Peyton Manning's become kind of a darling of the Broncos? My guess is the Broncos pay really well for Peyton Manning to be a Bronco right now. Like, he's at Nuggets games. He was in that schedule release video for the Broncos. He's at a bunch of games every year. Is it possible that, like, there was just kind of a bidding war for him between the Colts and the Broncos, and Denver just paid more?
I really believe that this is the case, because even, again, the other night when he was at another Nuggets game waving, before I even saw this list come out, I said to myself, out loud, I remember saying to myself, you know, if I was the Colts or a Colt fan, I feel like I would be kind of annoyed that Peyton Manning has suddenly become Mr. Bronco in retirement. Like, the majority of his career was still this iconic Colts legend. I understand that he won a Super Bowl and went to two with Denver, but everything he does, he talks openly about how much he loves it out there. He's all, like you just mentioned, everything he does. And if I'm Jim Irsay, and, you know, I poured my heart and soul, and obviously he got lucky, don't get me wrong, but in continuing to, you know, craft this relationship, and you know what, let Peyton Manning kind of choose where he wanted to go at the end of the line when they were moving on off of the neck injury, it feels slightly disrespectful to Indianapolis, even if that's not reality. So I think that is what's going on with Irsay.
Because Irsay is so weird, it's possible that Peyton Manning wanted to have some type of public face after he retired. Broadcasting purposes, endorsement purposes, maybe ownership purposes. You know, it helps to be a front-facing public public-facing figure if you want to do public-facing things moving forward. So he retired. He has his Omaha Productions. He does the Peyton Manning cast, whatever. So it's possible he looked at both teams and said, okay, where do I fit? And I've got Jim Irsay on one side, and he's a disaster. And the Broncos now have Walmart money, and they're paying me really well, so maybe I'll just go here. Maybe he just likes Colorado better than Indiana. I don't know. But he definitely has leaned into the Bronco stuff more than the Colt stuff, and he was a Colt for 13 years, drafted by the Colts. His greatest Super Bowl achievement really is winning with the Colts, because his Super Bowl win with the Broncos is that final year, which is all defense. 13 years in Indy, 4 years in Denver, and yet he's at every Broncos game, he's at Nuggets games, and he's in Broncos schedule release commercials and vignettes and stuff. So yeah, there might be something between him and Irsay right now.
And this is the other tip off to why I think that this is reality. D.A., if you look at this top five list, he doesn't include Lawrence Taylor. He doesn't include even Joe Montana. But at three includes John Elway, almost as that shot of, you're not even the best Bronco quarterback of all time. Remember that.
Bronco tie.
Yes. Why would Elway be three on the greatest players of all time list on Irsay's if he's excluding Peyton Manning? That is a direct shot at the Denver situation.
That's a good read. Yeah, that thing is bizarre. But I don't blame anybody for not wanting to work for or work with Jim Irsay, because he's such a bizarre, weird guy. He's just always kind of saying stupid things. On Jim Brown, I'm not going to do the Jim Irsay thing and do a top five ranking. I think when you talk about the greatest NFL players of all time, we kind of know the list anyway. So Jerry Rice, Lawrence Taylor, Tom Brady, Reggie White. But I don't think it's debatable that Jim Brown is the greatest football player ever. I don't think it's debatable. And the reason is, Jim Brown was so far ahead of his contemporaries. He is one of the only players, and perhaps the only player of that generation, that you could reasonably put into today's NFL and he would still be great. There's a lot of great players from back then, don't get me wrong. But if you put Sammy Baugh, if you put John Unitas, if you put Raymond Berry, if you put Lenny Moore, if you put these guys in today's NFL, I'm not sure their games translate. Now, it's always kind of a silly exercise, because what does John Unitas look like if he's got passing academies and Elite 11 camps and spread formations and back shoulder fades? You know, so it's not fair. But Jim Brown's skill set translates to any era. He was large. He was powerful. He was fast, he was elusive, and he thought the game. There's just no generation that Jim Brown wouldn't be great in. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, when Jim Brown gets to the NFL, there is simply nobody like him, and nobody knows how to defend it. Jim Brown is simply too good for everybody. It's very much like Babe Ruth swatting a million home runs more than entire teams. For just mere context, Jim Brown only played 9 seasons in the NFL. He led the league in rushing 8 times. Now imagine a player like Saquon Barkley today, or Ezekiel Elliott, or Christian McCaffrey, getting drafted to the NFL and played for 9 seasons and led the league in rushing 8 of those years. Basically led the league in rushing for a decade straight. I mean, it's impossible to even fathom that. Impossible. He also averaged more than 104 yards per game for his career. He averaged 100 yards per game. He averaged 104. Nobody else in the history of the game has averaged more than 100. Nobody's even in the triple digits. He's the only guy there, and he had 104.3 yards per game. More so, when he retired after just 9 seasons, he was the all-time leading rusher in NFL history. It took Walter Payton another 20 years to chase him down, okay? Walter Payton needed 18 more games and 420 more carries to do it. Now think about that. To chase down Jim Brown's record, the next greatest running back ever, Walter Payton, needed to play a season and a half longer than Jim Brown did. Brown played during 12-game seasons. He had to play a season and a half longer than Brown did. It needed 420 more carries to do so. Had Jim Brown played beyond the age of 29 when he retired and played into his 30s, who knows what the number would be? And who knows if anybody would have gotten there? Furthermore, when Jim Brown retired, he was the all-time leading rusher. The second all-time leading rusher was Joe Perry. He led Joe Perry by 2,500 yards. So he was clear 2,500 yards of all time, rushing yards. Joe Perry played 16 years. Jim Brown played 9. It's not a debate, it's not a comparison. And when people float that Tom Brady is the greatest football player ever, that is just wholly wrong. It's holistically wrong. It is just not right. Is he the greatest quarterback ever? Yes. Can you argue he's the greatest winner ever? Sure. Can you argue that Tom Brady's longevity is the greatest ever? Absolutely. He's not the greatest football player. Because Jim Brown, every year that he played, was the greatest football player in the league. 9 years, 9 times, he's the best football player in the league. He won MVP 3 times. He should have won it every single year. Tom Brady was never the greatest quarterback, even in the league, let alone for a 9-year period, let alone every year of his career. His longevity is fantastic. His winning is great. But he was not as dominant as Jim Brown was for those 9 seasons that Jim Brown was playing. So it's not a comparison. He's the greatest football player ever. He passes away. His legacy is very complicated. His domestic violence is not something we can simply just gloss over. He had violent tendencies against women in his life for his entire life. He admitted at the end of his life that it was a lot of mistakes. He could never get that under control. He was also, though, an amazing activist. He was an amazing soldier for civil rights. He battled tooth and nail until the very end of his life to try to quell and solve gang members and gang violence, and spoke to gang members for his entire life. He tried to create business opportunities for the less fortunate in the inner cities, for black business owners back in the 50s and 60s, when that was a far cry from anything that anybody was doing. He was a pretty remarkable guy. And one thing that we should remember about Jim Brown, because he's known for like brute strength, was that he was far more than that. Bill Belichick called him the greatest football player ever, and Bill Belichick coached Tom Brady. But also, everybody around Jim Brown recognized that his mind about football was so far above what other guys could do or think. That Brown saw the chessboard more than anybody else, and Brown was not just brute strength. He had elusive moves. He had spin moves. He had speed. He also could see how you could set up blocks. He saw the game. He played mind games with opponents. He would get up slow after every tackle, making the opponent think that he was injured, only to come back and hit him with more force the next time out to really shake up the defender. Sam Huff, who's a Hall of Fame defensive player, said his only tactic for trying to bring down Jim Brown was grab on and hold on for dear life until he got help. Jim Brown is... he's a titan. He's mythology. He's a titan. He's one of the all-time legends of sports in any sport. Oh, and by the way, the greatest football player ever is probably the greatest lacrosse player ever as well, if you can believe that. He was a 5-sport star in high school. He was a 4-sport star at Syracuse. He ran track, he played basketball, and he was arguably the greatest lacrosse player ever as well. That's how talented that guy was. When we come back here on the show, we've got news and we're stunned to it. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The only radio show where listeners are invited to their childhood homes. The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Ah, yes, you can always watch the show. Check us out on watchda.com. That's mobile friendly. Also, you can watch us as well on YouTube or on Twitch. And remember that you can check out clips on our social media pages, specifically on Twitter and Instagram every single day as well. And YouTube archives full episodes of the show. Okay? You can go back and watch every single episode of recent vintage archived on YouTube. How about that? Man, we are coming up on this Bob's Bar Show. We're coming up on this Friday, June the 16th. By the time we get to this Friday, it will be only 3 weeks away. Friday, June the 16th, the Bob's Bar Show, West Babylon, New York. You're like, DA, I need a travel guide. I need it preferably authored by you. I'm glad you asked, young Padawans. We have a full blow-by-blow, where to fly into if you're flying, where to travel to, Long Island Railroad stuff, best ways in and out of the city, local haunts, local recommendations, local joints if you're going out around the Bob's Bar Show, beaches, wineries, etc. We got it all. We got a one-stop shop travel guide and time, date, everything going on that way. I've tweeted that out. I've posted on Instagram as well. It's also on Facebook. And you can go to my website. There's a one page there. Also a one sheet at DamonAmendolara.com. But you can easily find it on any of our social media channels as well. And that should have everything. I'll tweet it out again this morning so that you know you can find it. And even if you're not on Twitter, you can find my Twitter page simply by searching it. Or you can go to my Instagram as well, at Damon Amendo on Instagram.
You think Ragnar Razorback making his way out to the wineries, DA?
I don't know, but I do have people that have been reaching out to me to tell me that they're coming, and I got a feeling we've got a really good crowd assembling. In fact, I think we might have some international flavor. I think we got some Canadians that are coming down for it.
Wow, is that right?
That is right. That is so. Yeah. So I'm feeling pretty good about this. And you did, after we needled you last week, you did reach out to Badlands Booker, and Badlands is confirmed, correct?
Yes. Badlands Booker confirmed. Kaney Linendahl confirmed. And I don't know. We might have a couple random acts of surprises that have been alluded to in the past.
Well, when it comes to Badlands, did you explain that we need him to belch in your face from the deepest recesses of his body and then smack you with a kill box?
I will tell you exactly what I have told Mr. Booker. Count me in, your dad's backyard. Thanks for inviting me back. Okay, so I went through the whole thing.
Your dad's backyard.
I said, I lost the bet on the show. To end the show as part of this elaborate scheme, I also need you to slap me in the face with a hot dog or a sausage, but then you also need to burp in my face. I assumed you'd be down, so I never asked. He wrote, ha, 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 with an exclamation point. I would definitely be down. It's all good. Whatever you need me to do, I'll do.
Oh, he's the best. Oh, Badlands is just an all-time great person. There's nothing you could tell him that he'd be like, ooh, no, I don't do that.
But he doesn't know that him burping in your face is like soft porn for you.
Right. Right. Doesn't know that you're going to be so enchanted.
To be fair.
Yeah, he's going to do this with like little butterflies and stars showing me floating in the air.
Hearts in his eyes.
What I'm going to say is you were...
Like Daisy Duck getting kissed by Daffy Duck.
This OnlyFans world we're in right now, this Only can't fans. Be the first time somebody's asked Badlands to burp in their face.
Come on.
And it's usually involving arousal. So I cannot imagine this is his first rodeo.
This is such an interesting theory. You believe that somebody would be sexually aroused by being belched in the face of by Badlands.
It's weird to use the word sexually aroused, but DA, look.
You inferred it.
Yeah.
You know, people get excited.
If the sausage casing fits.
People get excited by weird things. And I'm just saying, you know, it's no different than girls throwing their underwears on the stage for Elvis. When you see Badlands walk in the backyard, if you want him to burp in your face, you're doing so because it gives you a certain feeling.
I tell you, I better hide the bourbon bell from this because I don't know what she might do. Just melt into a puddle seeing Badlands walk into your dad's backyard, chug hot coffee and donuts, and then be ready to belch in your face. She might swoon like any of those Elvis fans.
Jump out the window.
Look, you saw her with Coach O, D.A. Now he's getting a burp from Badlands Booker. Things are different.
This would be the day to have him eat an Admiral's Feast, too, before.
Oh, yeah, that's good true. Scallop butter burp. Oh, yeah.
Casual Admiral's Feast.
That's right. Badlands, have a casual Admiral's Feast the night before so that you can mix all of those crustaceans and buttery seafood with coffee and donuts as you belch in Merez's face.
Or do we try to make this a punishment and make him eat things that Sean doesn't like?
Like pickles.
Pickles, tater tots.
Right. Yeah. Well, Merez, what do you hope you smell? What do you hope the experience is?
I want to smell a hot dog from the contest in 96, DA. I hope that something's still in there. I think, look, if you're smelling a Badlands burp, you want hot dog in there. You want hot dog in there. Now, he's chugged Mountain Dew. I think he did a fishbowl of his own Ecto Cooler the other day. So I'm assuming you're going to get a lot of weird sugars thrown at you. But deep down, if you, it's like, I don't know. If you're going to have Badlands burp in your face, you don't want to go to a Yankee game and watch Aaron Judge strike out four times. You better get hot dog in that burp.
Yeah, you want to smell memorabilia?
Well, I'm just saying, he's known originally for the hot dog thing. So you want hot dogs in there. You don't want to pay admission and then be left a little disappointed.
For those that are going to come to Bob's Bar, you'll have a front row seat for this. Obviously, we'll broadcast this on the simulcast as well. But the key is, at some point in the morning, Badlands is going to get up on stage, quote unquote, which is
deck.
The pool deck. Okay.
Well, Merez to be fair,
hold on,
he is not going to be allowed on that pool deck. It's about 10 years old.
He's going to reinforce it.
I can't have that problem.
Gotcha. Okay. So to set the scene, Merez will be in a folding chair on the pool deck or around the pool deck. Badlands will then belch from the deepest part of his belly into Merez's face. After that, he will take a long extended kielbasa, slap Merez across the grill. Then we will kick Merez's chair into the pool, no matter what the weather is like, no matter what the temperature is like. And at that moment, Foxy on the bagpipes will begin playing Auld Lang Syne, the New Year's Eve song, and that will kick off summer 2023.
I think we should try Badlands on the deck.
I don't. I got enough family problems right now. I don't need to hear that my competitive eater broke the deck.
You got a new deck out of it, falling up.
That's true. Pete's right. You probably got somebody to donate a deck to fix it for you.
It don't matter. Then it's the whole thing.
Marble, heated.
Then it's Sean. You better come over here and clean up the nails and everything. I can't do that.
So what, we're going to have you seated on the ground, he's going to belch, and then we're going to crane you up onto the stairs, deck.
I belch, I slap, I work my way up, somebody follows me in and kicks me in. Badlands literally, Micah, that deck is...
Kenyon Martin jersey.
That's right, I forgot all about that.
To kick off summer.
Yeah, your oldest pair of underwear you have to wear as well.
Who would, if you imagine telling somebody in the summer of 2020 that we'd be at a point where we're allowing somebody to burp openly in our face, slap us with a hot dog, and wear dirty underwear into a pool?
Well,
talk about pandemic over.
Germs 101.
Yeah, if the person was you, we'd believe it.
We should tie a belt around Badland's waist, which is attached to the chair, and then he turns around and starts moving towards the driveway, which then pulls the chair out from underneath Merez to that. That's the way that you slip into the pool.
I mean, that's a lot of machinations, but fine. However I end up, I end up.
Oh, God, and Cap is now playing the video of Merez's skidded underwear as he puts it into the camera lens, and it is so grotesque. He's going to be wearing that over his bathing suit, so everybody's going to get a nice look. Oh, God, it's so brown. I don't understand why your underwear look like they've been spattered with tan paint.
Did you get like a spray tan in your undercarriage one time? And
that's, God, by the way, that's the book I write, 50 Shades of Brown.
Oh, God. It's so heinous.
Number one bestseller.
Yep. All right, standing by for headlines and stunned. Here's Andrew Bogish.
So you guys miss Brad Stevens yet? At least his Celtics put up a fight their disappointing playoff exit. Joe Mazzulla's team was down 22 before halftime in Game 3 in Miami last night.
At the time, you think you say what needs to be said, but at the same time, like, you, I just have to be better. I got to make sure when we step on that floor that we're ready to execute, we're ready to be physical, we're ready to play harder than the other team. That's my job.
The Celtics did get as close as 12 shortly after halftime, then Miami raced to a 33-point edge, eventually winning 128-102 for a 3-0 lead in this Eastern Conference Final. No NBA team has ever blown that 3-0 lead. Jimmy Butler let Gabe Vincent be the star last night, a career-high 29 points with 6 threes. Duncan Robinson had a 22. Butler had 16 with 8 boards and 6 assists. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown combining for just 26 points for the Celtics. The Nuggets can get their sweep tonight, Game 4 with the Lakers in L.A. Nikola Jokic expecting the Lakers to show up, unlike those Celtics.
They're going to be aggressive. They're going to be extra physical, extra. They're going to run more. They're going to, you know, everything's going to be on a different level or one more of anything. So we will see.
The Nuggets would be the last of the 4 ABA teams that merge with the NBA to make the finals. The other 3, the Spurs, the Pacers, and the Nets. The Dallas Stars are halfway to
McCarran about the offseason.
Because they're in an 0-2 hole to the Vegas Golden Knights in the Western Conference Final. Dallas was less than 3 minutes away from a split on the strip, but Jonathan Woustashier tied the game with 2:22 left in regulation. Then Chandler Stephenson got the 3-2 win. 72 seconds into
Can you just
overtime.
Be patient until after bacon?
Oh, I took the Worcestershire joke from you
Can
again?
Can you just
I'm
be
sorry.
Patient?
I thought 8 times was enough.
Is there a double Worcestershire? Because there's a Marcia show and now Worcestershire?
Can everybody just let Canadian bacon happen?
It's a busy week in the NFL. 20 teams open OTAs today, including the Ravens, Bills, Chiefs, and Niners. 10 more go tomorrow. The last straggler will be the Bengals, who don't begin these offseason practices for another 2 weeks. It took just 2 hours and 6 minutes for Justin Verlander of the Mets to outduel Shane Bieber and the Guardians on Sunday Night Baseball 2-1. The Mets sweeping this split doubleheader for a 5-game win streak, all 5 wins by a single run. In the afternoon, the Cardinals still red hot.
The 3-1 pitch. Mercado swings and he hits the ball past the second baseman Vargas into right field. 2 more runs come in. The throw to third, not in time to get Donovan. A 5 RBI day for number 9 batter Oscar Mercado.
5 RBI and a 10-5 win at Dodger Stadium. The highlight from John Rooney on Cardinals Radio. St. Louis has won 11 of 14 after that abysmal start. They're now third in the NL Central, jumping the Cubs and Reds, who lost to the Phillies and Yankees respectively yesterday. And it's 5 major titles now for Brooks Koepka, a 3rd Wanamaker trophy after a 2-shot win at the PGA Championship. And yes, Koepka is the first live golfer to win a major. And now we are stunned.
Woo-hoo!
doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Today's stunned is the first submission from listener Joey Kieran via Twitter DM, so thank you, Joey. If you're going to be crazy on public transportation, one could argue you might as well be as crazy as possible, no half measures. So we're on a MAX train in Portland, Oregon last week, and transit police were asked to deal with a, quote, unwanted person. He was unwanted despite the fact he was dressed completely like Captain Jack Sparrow and declared himself the character from the movie when officers asked for his name.
Wow.
The craziness did take a turn when the man allegedly tried to bite officers as they tried to remove him from the train. But as my good friend Pete knows, we encounter an unnecessary amount of insanity at times on the subway. In fact, so much of the Pete doesn't take it anymore.
That's right.
But I feel like if there were movie characters bothering Pete, he might have stayed on the one train with me.
At least try.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, just don't say, like, be a movie star. Like, have a character.
I like this. This is much better than somebody dressed in, like, an Elmo costume in Times Square. This is, like, a real human costume. I think we need more of this on trains.
We don't have to bite people, but dress up and be loopy.
Yeah, I agree. I like, if you just got random movie characters, I think this is good.
If someone walked around like Uncle Buck, I'd appreciate it.
True. Yeah, true. Now, Bogues, does the story say why police approached Captain Jack Sparrow? Was he doing something wrong?
I don't know what made people call for help or whatever, but people on the train reported this guy for, I don't know if he was doing a terrible Jack Sparrow impersonation. I don't know if he was doing other pirate material and it was flat. I'm not sure what he was doing, but somebody called for assistance, and that's why the cops showed up.
I'd like a little bit more details on this because it says police responded to a report of an unwanted person. That's kind of not fair because I've been unwanted places as well, but is that reason for cop intervention? That you're just, we don't want you around here? I mean, if he's dressed as Captain Jack Sparrow, I don't know. Seems like he's an addition to any group that he's with.
I would much rather this than more people playing like the bucket drums. I think he's absolutely an addition.
It is Portland. It's an artsy town. Maybe they were like film snobs and wanted, you know, didn't think he was worthy of their time from a franchise Disney movie.
He must have been doing something because, yeah, Portland's a pretty forgiving place for eccentrics. And just dressed and named acting like Captain Jack Sparrow does not seem like reason to be unwanted. If you're going to be wanted anywhere by portraying Captain Jack, it would be Portland. It's like either Portland or LA, right? I mean, where else would you possibly have a gig beside those two places and be embraced?
Maybe they were also worried he would be a pirate.
It's
not funny.
I don't even...
He's 43 years old. How old is too old to be playing a character on the subway?
He's close.
He is close.
No, why? Yeah. Why?
50?
Why?
Well, I guess 45? You had an age-appropriate character. Like, at
come
some
on.
Point,
if you saw a guy in his 70s dressed as Rocky Balboa, you'd laugh your ass off.
Hmm. I would.
I don't fair. Know about that.
No, you got to, if you just have to be age appropriate. Like, at some point, he's going to age out of Jack Sparrow. I don't know who he then becomes after that. Like,
he's got to find older roles.
Yeah, exactly. Then he's like Clint Eastwood in something.
Hey, I'm Clint Eastwood in Gran
Torino.
He's
now going to be Gran Torino.
Or the cowboy, Unforgiven. He could get a horse.
You know what I don't like is how dirty the Times Square costumes are. You know, when you see Minnie Mouse or you see Elmo, it's like, why are their costumes so soiled?
I can give you a couple reasons.
I mean, A, the people they're hugging nonstop. Two, they never wash them.
Yeah, why don't they wash them?
Well, three, pollution.
I don't think, I mean, these seem like people that work long hours. I don't think there's a lot of You know, you got to wash your underwear first. Those costumes, they also could fall apart pretty easily in a washing machine. I found Elmo fur in my washer before. It's a bad scene.
I don't think they're taking 15s, too, to clean up their uniform. Mm.
I think it could. I could understand the head not being washed because you can't throw that in a washing machine. But the outfit itself, I mean, somebody do a little cleaning. It is grotesque.
Yeah, it smells like hepatitis and Heineken. I agree.
That's the other two H's.
Yeah.
Mary Carroll's, you said, smells like Heineken and heroin.
Yeah. Yeah. This is hepatitis and Heineken.
Hepatitis. What's the smell of hepatitis?
The Elmo costume in Times Square. That's it.
It's just so soiled. You know, it's like seeing a toddler that just came in from the backyard. It's like, why is everything so dirty? Why, Elmo, why is your face dirty?
That's where they're not getting it right. They, one day, one of them should wear the head and a suit underneath it. And it look even better.
Maybe they'll get a tip. I love that. Yeah, three-piece suit.
Business Elmo?
That's right. Yeah, business Elmo. One's wearing a tuxedo. The other one's wearing just, you know, business casual.
Wall Street Elmo. It's coming back from the stock market.
No.
When we come back here on the show, who's going to give James Harden a ridiculous deal? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Laughter is the only medicine. The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
The DA Show is available on your smart speaker every single day. Tell your smart speaker to play CBS Sports Radio. Have us on around the house or the office every single day. If you're working out in the garage, have a smart speaker out there. If you're down in the basement, have a smart speaker down there. Just say, play CBS Sports Radio, and it will hook you up. Yeah, those things are good for us. Oh, yeah. Smart speaker, CBS Sports Radio, you are covered. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. We know that Brian Windhorst knows what he's talking about, and he said this week that there is an appetite around the NBA for James Harden in free agency. The deal could be a four-year deal worth, get this, ready to hold your collective hearts, worth $200 million. Now, Harden has a player option with the Sixers for next year that's worth $35 million. So he can opt in for 1 year, $35 million, or take his shot in free agency, and everybody assumes he will do that. The Sixers can offer more. But would you give James Harden $50 million a year? Note that if you do sign him to a four-year deal, you would be giving him $50 million per season through his age 37 season. So you sign it up for $50 million a year in Harden, including when he's 36 and 37. I wish I could laugh maniacally like Mraz right now and say, eat it!
Eat it!
Eat it! That's insanity. That's pure, unadulterated insanity. If we are learning anything from this year's postseason, if we are learning anything from previous postseasons of recent vintage, teams with guys that center around players like James Harden go nowhere. Look at what has made the Lakers the Lakers. Yes, LeBron. Yes, AD. But also an array of role guys that understand what it takes to kind of elevate themselves and the team. And a great player like LeBron getting AD to focus and players staying healthy. The Nuggets, they have no divas or prima donnas on that team. I mean, maybe Michael Porter, maybe there's question marks about his commitment level, but, you know, there's no James Harden. They're not paying a guy $50 million a year to maybe show up because they've got Jamal Murray and they've got Jokic, and those are the two engines that make things go. The Heat, look at the Heat. The Heat would have no interest in James Harden. Every NBA team should follow what the Heat would do here. WWHD, what would the Heat do? Because there's no way they would think it's worth it. The idea that you would have to pay $50 million a year to James Harden and then thus make him one of the most important pieces of your puzzle is ludicrous. It's one thing if James Harden is the third or fourth guy on your team and you don't have to build around him or necessarily need for him to be at an elite level. But if you pay him $50 million a year, what else are you doing? Like, that's not a throwaway piece. That's not just an ancillary piece. That's not just a depth option. He's got to be the guy or a big-time guy on your roster. So it's a joke, and a GM that does that is out of his mind. When we come back on the show, oh, God, what does last night's blowout tell us about the Celtics? Plus, next hour, Canadian bacon. We're about 25 minutes away. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.